And by the way, when guys lead the league nowadays in scoring, it's by a point or two. Jordan, when he was young, was not leading the league in scoring by a point or two. Early in his career, he was smoking dudes like Dominique Wilkins, 5, 6, 7 points more per average, per game on average. So when you look at the distance between him and second place, and you look at guys averaging close to 35 nowadays, Jordan's clearly going to be up over 40 points a game as a great two-way player. He's the greatest player of all time for a reason.
That was our Max Kellerman, making a case that Michael Jordan is the greatest NBA player of all time. It's a debate that comes up every now and then in the Sportspedia, and one that's getting new life as we watch Jordan dominate on The Last Dance. But while MJ crushed the competition in the 1990s, how would he have fared in today's NBA? Today, ESPN's Kurt Goldsberry answers that question, then tries to settle the GOAT debate once and for all. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Monday, May 11th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Marathon. Hey, Kirk.
Before we get started, I cut my own hair yesterday, so that's why I have a hat on.
It looks fine. Kirk Goldsberry is an NBA analyst and writer for ESPN. Kirk, so I swear, I promise, we are not here to debate MJ versus LeBron. At least not until the end of the interview.
Believe me, I have my stance. It is locked and loaded.
We'll get to that. I don't want to alienate half of the audience before we begin. So over the last few weeks, those of us who have watched The Last Dance have borne witness to the greatness that is Michael Jordan. And that greatness does inform the MJ LeBron debate insofar as it has reminded us of how dominant Jordan was. But of course, he was playing in a different era. Basketball was very different from how it is today, which can make it hard to compare those two players or to evaluate how Jordan would fare in today's NBA. So let's start here and sort of establish that point of comparison. What was the league like when Jordan came into it?
Well, Jordan came into the NBA in 1984, and it was a very, very different place. The best players in the league at that time were Magic Johnson.
Magic Johnson throws it up and gets it after the miss by McAdoo.
Larry Bird.
Bird again. Larry's saying to the crowd here, this is what you came to see, huh?
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was still really good.
Kareem, low, against Harris. No question on the half-court offense. The Lakers go to Kareem.
Long story short, Mina, the NBA was run by big men, just as it had been since its entire history. And 8 of the 10 highest paid players by the time Jordan even retired were centers. When Jordan was drafted in 1984, just to give you an idea how dominant and how valuable centers were, 16 of the 20 previous MVP award winners heading into the 1984-85 season were centers. So Jordan entered an NBA that's fair to characterize as a center's league. And obviously that's very, very different than what we're describing here in 2020.
So how big of a deal was it that the best player in the league, Michael Jordan, was a shooting guard?
Dude, you can't overstate how big of a deal it is. It was really weird. I mean, Magic had showed us that point guards could be great. Bird had showed us that power forwards and shooting forwards could be great. No MVP had ever come from the shooting guard position. Nobody had really ever dominated the league or won championships from that position or in that way. And again, one of the main things that makes Michael Jordan such a special character in NBA history is that he deformed the very aesthetic of NBA greatness. He disrupted, to use a term from Silicon Valley, what it meant and what it looked like to be an NBA superstar.
I love deformed as a verb because it sort of implies that he bent the league to his own will.
He did that, man. I mean, he came in there and it was violent and it was beautiful and it was for the betterment of the future of the sport.
A couple of weeks ago, you wrote a piece about why Michael Jordan was such a transcendent scorer. Can you explain what it was that made that dominance so unusual?
Yeah, well, it starts with the fact that he's a guard. And again, to contextualize it against what was going on in the 80s and 90s is shooting guards and wings didn't dominate the NBA. We had the occasional superstar like Julius Erving. So I'm not going to say that he was the first star wing, but he was a jump shooter. Long story short, he was a jump shooting guard who could attack the rim. And boy, could he attack the rim. So the early part of Jordan's career is obviously marked by these highlight jump man silhouettes, the dunk contest leap from the free throw line in Chicago Stadium. We can all picture that in our head.
Mission control ready for launch.
That brought Dominique to his feet. And a 50 for Michael Jordan on his first dunk of the semifinal round.
But by the end, Mina, you know, Jordan would beat teams with just incredible mid-range shooting. And a majority of his buckets in the Last Dance season in that second three-peat came off of mid-range jump shots that either came from post plays, dribble pull-ups, quick stops, just an endless array of mid-range jumpers.
MJ with it on the wing, takes the fadeaway jumper, long range.
And one scout told me, and it really stuck out, is like, I've been watching The Last Dance for, you know, 8 hours now. I haven't seen the same move twice. It's not like he had a go-to move over and over again, although his fadeaway was pretty close. But man, he did it all, but he did it in this area that we don't use very much anymore, aka the mid-range.
And these were also very difficult shots, right?
Think about it this way. If you're going up against the Bulls and it's 1992 or 1997 and you're an opposing coach, your number one objective is pretty clear. If you can stop or slow down Michael Jordan, you have a chance. If you can't, you don't. So almost every night that Jordan played, he would get the other team's best defender. And that person would want to play their best game of the year because everybody in their arena was watching it. And so he did this 82 games a year to put up the best sort of scoring numbers in the league against the best defensive performers in the league.
So you made a heat map for Jordan, and then in the same story, you made one for Harden, and you put them next to each other. And I was trying to think of a comparison. It almost looks like urban and rural America, right? Or like two heat maps that are just wildly different, almost like people playing two different sports.
100%. And Harden deserves all the credit in the world for becoming the best scorer of this era. But this era is dominated by sort of this money ball dogma of efficiency, efficiency, efficiency. And when you look at James Harden's shot signature, you see a guy who shoots near the hoop. He's a great basket attacking guard like Jordan. But then away from the paint, Mina, this dude only shoots threes.
James Harden just knocked down a triple falling down to beat the buzzer from 40 feet.
He avoids the mid-range just like he avoids shaving cream, I would say. And then when you look at, say, Jordan, you see almost the exact opposite. Remember that old image of Pangea and how the continents sort of fit together? These two shot charts kind of look like South America and Africa, where Jordan is like one shape, all mid-range. And then Harden's jump shot activity is sort of surrounding that, all three-point areas. And Jordan didn't shoot a lot of threes.
First of all, thank you for the Pangea reference. Haven't heard that word in a very long time. But I want to ask you about those threes and why Jordan didn't shoot him. Because in that story, you highlighted a game from the 97 playoffs in the first round between the Bulls and the Bullets. Jordan scored 55 points, the most since he came back from retirement. Kirk, he made one three-pointer. I'm guessing James Harden has never and never will have a stat line that looks like that. But it raises the question, why didn't he shoot more from distance?
The thing that people forget is that Michael Jordan grew up on basketball courts without three-point lines on them. When Michael Jordan made his first iconic game-winning shot in 1982,
32 seconds to go, a one-point lead
in the Louisiana Superdome.
3-1 with Ewing in the middle.
In the NCAA championship game to beat Patrick Ewing's Georgetown team.
Jordy to Black. The time, 18. Shot, Jordan, Michael Jordan, 14 seconds.
He hit a jumper from the left side of the court. I think it was about an 18-foot jumper. There was no three-point line on that court.
It's over.
So when people criticize Jordan's eventual three-point shooting efficiency, it's a bit unfair. But one stat that really makes that clear is in Jordan's rookie year, NBA teams averaged 3 3-point tries per game. This season, Mina, they're averaging 33. Everybody's playing right now. From the time they first held a basketball, the 3-point shot was part of their lives. Jordan didn't grow up in that reality.
I guess that raises the question, and this is an important one when we're asking, you know, whether Jordan would have dominated in today's NBA. Do you think he could have become a good 3-point shooter?
So when scouts look at shooters in college, some guys don't have great 3-point shots when they come out of college, but they look at the free throw number and they look at some other jump shooting numbers. And Michael was an 84% free throw shooter. Michael was an 84% free throw shooter, which is very, very good. We already talked about how good he was in the mid-range. So to me, when you take arguably the most physically gifted guard in the history of basketball and one of the most competitive superstars in the history of American sports, and you ask me, could this man have developed a decent 3-point shot? The answer is obviously yes. The idea that Michael Jordan wouldn't be able to do that is ludicrous to me.
After the break, let's talk about some of the other ways in which Jordan's game would translate in today's NBA.
We're presented by Marathon. Now, more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. And Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for high-quality, top-tier gas. While we are aware travel might not be top of mind, there might be times where you have to hop in the car to run an errand. Maybe you have to drop off groceries and supplies to your family. Maybe you've become an amazing baker and want to drop off a few dozen cookies on your best friend's porch. Or maybe you just want to drive around to all of your friends' homes simply to wave from a safe distance. But before you head out, remember to fuel up at Marathon. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and reducing emissions. Remember, wherever you need to go, the people at Marathon are behind you all the way. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
So, Kirk, we start off by talking about what the NBA was like when Michael Jordan played. Today, offense is more prolific than it's ever been, in part because of changes to the game itself and the rules. Does that make it difficult to compare Jordan's production to today's numbers?
Yeah, of course. I mean, and just like in football, I mean, as you know very well, the defense has become sort of harder and harder to play because of rule changes. And in Jordan's time, perimeter touch rules were very different. In other words, defenders could put their hand on offensive players, particularly guards on the perimeter. You can't do that anymore. And that opened up the league. In 2004, after the Pistons absolutely suffocated Kobe's Lakers in the 2004 finals, the NBA really curtailed hand checking and opened up the game immensely for guards. Steve Nash comes out of nowhere, a relatively slight point guard who's brilliant, but was unlocked because of these rule changes and won two straight MVPs. The guards and wings are dominating today in large part because the game is a little bit different because of those rule changes. So yeah, it's hard to compare. And looking at Michael Jordan's physique and his abilities, he would benefit immensely from this current rule base.
So you think, for example, on defense, he would actually thrive in today's NBA?
If you asked an NBA scout in 2020 to draw a picture or list the characteristics of theoretically elite defender, they might draw you a picture of Michael Jordan. 6'6", 200 pounds, great quickness, great balance, incredible instincts. I mean, essentially the most close physical comp from the size might be Klay Thompson, who's one of our best perimeter defenders right now. So Michael would have been incredible on defense.
One common argument that the old heads make is that, NBA players used to be tougher. And then the response from modern fans and analysts is, well, they're more athletic today. What about Jordan? How does he fit into that framework?
Just look at his nicknames, Mina. They called this guy Air Jordan. They called him the Black Cat. And they called him Jumpman. I mean, that tells you all you need to know. This dude was a freak. There's a passage from a 1983 New York Times Magazine profile where the writer says this guy is a well-proportioned 6'6", 190 pounder who can either play guard or forward. And he is fast, having run the 40-yard dash in 4.3 seconds. Basketball players who are 6'6 aren't supposed to run the 40-yard dash in 4.3 seconds. We know he can jump. The silhouette is all you need to see there. But he could run like Deion Sanders. I say in the piece that you can imagine Klay Thompson's frame combined with Allen Iverson's agility and Russell Westbrook's speed. That's Michael Jordan.
So we talked about how the NBA has evolved in terms of the rules, the defense, the three-pointers, but there are other ways in which the game has changed. For example, significantly more pick and rolls, significantly fewer post-up plays. How would that have affected Michael Jordan's game?
Well, it would have affected it a lot. I mean, I think you're exactly right. We're living in what might be called the pace and space era of the NBA. In other words, all the players on offense are generally near the three-point line. Just generally, there's a more open culture in half-court sets in 2020 than there was in the 90s. But again, if Michael Jordan is the ball handler in a pick and roll, one thing we would see is him hunting mismatches, just like the Rockets would endlessly target Steph Curry in a series against the Warriors with James Harden. A modern-day Jordan would be able to hunt a mismatch on the perimeter, get the guy he wanted to guard him to guard him, and then attack him. And there wouldn't be as many people in the paint. There's no Bill Laimbeers. There's no Robert Parrishes. You know, there's no Karl Malones as much in the paint on defense, which would enable Michael, the rim attacker, to really thrive. Long story short, the new aesthetic would be really compatible with how Michael found his shots and created his points.
So, Kirk, I'm sensing that you're pretty confident about Michael Jordan's ability to play in the modern NBA. Not just play, but to kick butt. Oh, kick butt. Didn't think I'd say kick butt today. Let's keep going. What's the best argument against MJ's dominance? Like, what do you think is the most compelling reason why he might not have been so dominant in today's league?
He smoked too many cigars? No, I don't know. I think it might have been, it might be the shooting. It might be the shooting. Because if you look at Basketball Reference and just say, man, this guy couldn't shoot threes and shooting guards need to shoot threes. So if you really are stubborn that the stats that we saw from Michael in the 90s from beyond the arc would be his stats in a hypothetical 2020 version, then that's a pretty strong case that this guy's efficiency, which is a holy, holy word in today's NBA, his efficiency from downtown would hold him back from being the greatest player in the world.
What about Jordan's peers? How do you think his teammates and competitors would have fared in today's league?
Well, we wrote a piece that Scottie Pippen might actually be just as much of a great sort of progenitor of contemporary greatness in the NBA as Jordan himself. You know, Scottie Pippen, a couple inches taller, a couple inches longer on the wingspan, really was a prototype for players like Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, today's best two-way wings that could score on one end and then shut down people on the other end. With this versatility, some of the other guys, I mean, like the Luke Longleys, the Bill Wenningtons, those old school plotting centers, they don't have a spot in today's league anymore. Rodman would have more trouble, Mina, because of the lack, again, of the offensive skill. The one thing that is fair to say in defense of today's game is that almost everybody on the court is skilled. All five guys out there can dribble and shoot for the most part. I remember some of my favorite memories of watching the 90s Bulls were when Rodman would get fouled and go to the free throw line, and it was just chaos. You had no idea. He literally didn't care if he could shoot the free throw, make the free throw. It was comedy.
All right. So we are not at the bar. We are not at the barbershop. You took yourself
both
there
are closed,
yesterday.
By the way.
When you cut your own hair. we are standing in front of our computer, sitting in front of our computers. And so I'm going to end with the debate, the question that has caused many an argument over the last decade or so, MJ or LeBron?
Well, let me preface it with a quick statement. I'm a child of the 1990s. I was a teenager watching these 90s Bulls teams. So I am biased. I fell in love with basketball watching Michael Jordan. I love LeBron James, but I'm about to say that Michael Jordan is a lot better than him for a few reasons.
A lot.
Yeah. When people have this debate, there are two questions happening. There is who had a better basketball career and who is a better basketball player. Michael Jordan had a much better basketball career and will have a much better legacy because, like we said earlier, he totally revolutionized the sport. He was the coolest man in the world for a decade. And to watch him in the 90s wasn't just to watch a guy dominate pro basketball. It was to watch him tear down conventions that guided the sport for a long time and replace them with a brand new look and feel. He was the progenitor of what we're watching right now. He invented the way that guards and wings dominate the game. He invented the way that Kobe played the game. And so in my estimation, you have to take that into account. And it's hard to imagine any other player in the history of the game changing the way kids try to play it. Michael changed the game. And look, the thing I'll say about LeBron James is he might be a more talented all-around basketball player than Michael Jordan. LeBron is certainly a gifted passer in ways that Michael wasn't. He's a bigger player. He's a better rebounder. But when it comes down to it, why is Michael Jordan better than LeBron James for me personally? It's because where the NBA was when he inherited it in 1984 to where he left it eventually in 2003. He took it from a nice pro sports league to one of the biggest pro sports properties on planet Earth.
I look forward to two people having this argument in 20 years after the 10-part LeBron documentary.
The 10-part LeBron documentary in 2043. I don't think I'd watch it. I don't think I'd watch 10 hours on LeBron James. I'd watch a few.
Wow. Hater.
I'm not a hater.
Hater. All right. Thank you so much, Kirk.
Thank you, Mina.
And LeBron stands his Twitter handle. I think it's at Kirk Goldsberry. Did I get that right? At Kirk Goldsberry.
You got that right. I love LeBron James.
Coming up, why hashtag run with Mod was trending this weekend.
Hi guys, given everything that is happening in the world right now, most of us are buying things online. I saw that AT&T started doing two really helpful things for those who want to buy a new phone or device online. They are offering fast, free, non-contact delivery and curbside pickup so that online shopping is as simple and safe as possible. On top of that, they have a flexible return policy so you can shop at ease. You can visit att.com to learn how to shop online from the safety of your home 24/7. Subject to change, restrictions apply.
Here's another story I want you to know. This weekend, you might have seen I Run With Mod trending on social media. The hashtag was started by Jason Vaughn and Akeem Baker, two friends of Ahmaud Arbery, a 25-year-old black man who was killed in broad daylight while going for a jog in a neighborhood on the outskirts of Brunswick, Georgia. The incident occurred more than 2 months ago when two men, Gregory McMichael and his son Travis, pursued Arbery in a truck and then shot him. It did not gain widespread attention until recently, however, when a graphic video of the shooting emerged. Gregory and Travis McMichael, who are white, claimed after killing Arbery that they had pursued him because he looked like a suspect in a few local break-ins. They were arrested on Thursday and charged with murder. In the days since, people seeking justice for Arbery have been using the hashtag and posting images and video of themselves running for 2.23 miles, a reference to the date on which he was killed. Jason Vaughn, who was also Arbery's high school football coach, told Runner's World when asked about starting the hashtag that his friend loved to run because, quote, it cleared his mind and it helped him make sense of the world. Unless it was pouring rain, he was running. The cause has spread across the country and drawn attention from many in the sports world. Malcolm Jenkins, an NFL safety now with the New Orleans Saints, posted a video of himself running.
even though they arrested those two men, we got to make sure they don't forget his face and that he gets his justice in court. Y'all continue to support my brother, uplift his name, show his face, stay diligent. We love y'all.
Along with former wide receiver Anquan Boldin, Jenkins is one of the founders of the Players Coalition, a group created to promote racial and social justice. They sent a letter signed by current players, including Cam Jordan and Tom Brady, to the U.S. Attorney General and Director of the FBI, requesting a federal investigation into Arbery's death. The letter cited delays in prosecution, an issue that has spurred anger and criticism around the country, and was addressed by Vic Reynolds, the director of Georgia's Bureau of Investigation, at a press conference. Reynolds noted that it took his organization less than 36 hours to secure warrants for felony murder. He spoke on Friday, which was also Arbery's birthday. He would have turned 26 years old. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.